Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello and welcome back. Small bit of housekeeping before we get into our guest of honor. First, by the time you hear this, hoping you are enjoying our annual convention in the beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. But also want to put out there too, by the time you hear this, we should also have registration open for our fall events, both Advocacy Summit and our Business Operations Summit, along with our Social Inclusion Summit, and of course, Fall CDME. So registration should be open by the time you hear this. Please go to our website, destinationsinternational.org, for further details, and hope to see you there in the fall. So our guest today is Amir Alon, the president and CEO of Longwoods International, a leader in the tourism and destination data research space. Amir himself brings a wealth of experience and knowledge to the table, especially when it comes to understanding resident sentiment towards tourism, our topic for today. Longwoods International has been the forefront of gathering and analyzing research and data to help destinations understand how their residents feel about tourism in their communities, along with visitors as well, got to point that out. This research is crucial for creating sustainable and positive relationships between visitors and locals alike. Today, Amir will share some of the latest findings from Longwoods International studies discussing the importance of resident sentiment in tourism planning and offering insights into how destinations can better engage with communities to foster support for tourism. So without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Amir. Amir, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andreas. Glad to be on here.
You might be one of the most well-known and well-liked individuals in tourism, but for the benefit of our listeners, a little bit of background in history of how your current role and your upbringing into the tourism space.
My upbringing. Well, you know, half of us went to school for tourism. The other half of us kind of fell into the industry. I was putting myself through school in Dayton, Ohio, and needed a job for evenings and weekends, and found myself working an airport shuttle van for a property that no longer exists there, running room services, airport shuttle runs, banquet setup, all that kind of stuff. Next thing I knew, I was in hotel management, and one thing led to another, and I've discovered this wonderful world of destination marketing, and made my way through the industry 35 years later. I've had the pleasure of representing several destinations, including state tourism director at State of Ohio, more recently Brand USA, and for the past 9 years now, exactly, president and CEO at Longwoods International.
So fair to say you're a lifer?
I'm a lifer. I love it.
Well, for today's conversation, I want to point out a few things before we start the questions. First, we're talking specifically resident sentiment. Everything referenced in the conversation today we have on our website, destinationsinternational.org. Before we kind of get into the findings, Amir, I thought it'd be worth kind of asking you, probing you, how we got to this point. You've been a mainstay at our advocacy summit really since the beginning in talking resident sentiment, but I thought it'd be worth to start the conversation, your organization's basic relationship with sentiment analysis, and then the onset of beginning resident sentiment.
Sure. Well, let's see. I joined Longwoods in 2015, and by 2016, I started getting occasional phone calls from some of our clients and other contacts across the industry that would ask me the questions of, listen, we've got some issues here. The media is starting to throw around the term over-tourism or visitor management. We're starting to look at some issues. The Airbnbs are invading our neighborhoods. We're starting to hear some, you know, rumblings on those kind of things. Do you have research on that? Does there exist any research on that? And we're kind of, because, you know, and I think the clincher was when I had a colleague call me, and they'd been working for 3 years on a waterfront development project, and they thought they had everybody's buy-in, everybody was all excited about it. And all of a sudden the groundbreaking came, and there was a group of local resident protesters with picket signs, you know, there and being very vocal in the media. So I turned to our team, and you know, they always tell you in management to make sure you surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. And I've got an amazing team of researchers. And I said, guys, can we do like a literary search and take a look and see if there's any kind of national guidance on resident sentiment towards tourism? And really hadn't seen anything out there. And yep. So we said, you know what? Let's do it ourselves. Let's ask the question. So back in 2017, we did our first national resident sentiment towards tourism study. We got some really interesting data. We know we'd had some conversations with you and Jack over at DI and share with you those insights. And it's become a wonderful partnership of being able to provide this information every year since, and it's gotten bigger and better every year. We've gone beyond just asking about the, you know, how many are too many and how do you feel, but we ask about tourism development and growth, the economy, employment, workforce attraction, quality of life, tourism promotion, of course, the environment, short-term rentals, even sporting events. So we've really gotten to a number of categories over the years. It's been really fun. And of course, a couple years later, at the request of our client base, we've rolled out the methodology for local levels. And so we've had dozens upon dozens of destinations do their own resident sentiment studies.
Two others got to point out an appreciation of the partnership, our expansion up north into Canada. And last year, one of the things we appreciated was you entered, allowed to ask questions about travel boycotts and bans to get resident sentiment there, which was a first for us. So it's been a great appreciation. It's been a powerful mainstay for us at every advocacy summit because we see this as one of the firm tenets of stakeholder engagement around resident sentiment. So I'm going to ask you, I think this is going to be the toughest question for you. Everything, like I said, everything we're going to talk about today, all the findings, we're not going to try to belate listeners with tons of stats. Or everyone can read the briefs on our website. I have seen you do this presentation. I've seen you do 400 slides in 40 minutes. So the toughest question for you I have right now is, can you do an overview of those key findings of the brief in a podcast question format? Go.
Yes. Very simple takeaways in bullet point fashion for you. First of all, now that we've done the U.S. and the Canadian versions for a few years, we can tell you that Canadian residents are still generally much more positive towards tourism than Americans. While there's good news on both fronts, the Canadians tend to be much more positive. There is still very much an ongoing need for better resident engagement, and there are some communication disconnects that exist, and we can talk about that. And again, still a very strong disconnect between tourism and quality of life on the U.S. side of things. And the residents are generally positive about tourism, but they're somehow kind of missing that, how that visitation is actually helping improve the quality of life in their communities. And we've had a workforce challenge. No surprise there. We've all been talking about it for a few years. But what used to be in our studies a little more isolated towards Gen Z now has popped up post-pandemic here to be a little bit more multi-generational in there. So those were kind of some of the key takeaways. How's that for a minute or two or less?
Hardest question. Like I said, I've seen you do 400 slides in 40 minutes. So well done, Amir. To try to dig in a little bit about the U.S. and Canadian insights, since this is now a few years into it, I thought you're the probably most apt person to ask this because Longwoods has a basis in Canada. What is your thoughts on some of the differences between the U.S. and Canadian insights? And what do you think accounts for this?
Well, when it comes to sentiment, I think the Canadians understood the underlying tenet of which, Jack Johnson kind of made famous at the annual convention was in 2019 in St. Louis when he stood on stage and said the most important, customer for you is not the visitor, it's the resident. And I think the Canadians recognized that several years ahead of us, quite frankly, and started their stakeholder engagement a little bit differently than we did here in the U.S. So I think there's a little more proactive communication that's happening on the Canadian side with the destination organizations and their constituent bases in the U.S. So there's a little more recognition. And then when we talk about things like stewardship and the environment and sustainability and things like that, those are conversations that north of the border, they've been having a lot longer, quite frankly, than we have. So I think that's led to a little more positive because most of the issues that I see we had here in the U.S. side are really just more disconnects in terms of communication. It's not that they're opposed to us or opposed to the efforts, tourism promotion, tourism development. It's just that they're not connecting the dots, and we haven't done a good enough job yet as an industry.
Oh, man. Great. Lead into my next question. One of my favorite data points from there is talking about when residents are informed, then they become supporters of tourism and destination promotion. I've seen you on the stage talk about that point a million times, and it's worth always repeating, but how do you see that insight and the intersect of destination organizations?
And that's it, you know, because what we see constantly, I mean, since the first year we've been doing this, is that the majority of American residents see, and Canadians as well, you know, believe in tourism destination promotion. They believe it should be encouraged in their backyard. They generally believe, and again, I'm speaking national, not isolated destinations, but on a national level, they believe it, you know, they believe it should be done. It should be promoted. For the most part, they're okay with, you know, that it's a function of their government or their local, you know, tourism boards and destination organizations. They have no problem with that. And actually, they have a lot of pride and sense of place. They actually generally, as a majority, enjoy talking about the assets and showing off the destination of the assets to their visitors or family, friends, or whoever. But they say it time and time again. The majority of them say that the first time they hear about some new development project, something happening as tourism related in their backyard, is when they hear it on the news or read it in the paper. And that is a problem because they don't feel informed. They don't feel they had the opportunity to have their seat at the table. And that's something that we've got to keep getting better at.
Yeah, I said, I've heard you say that point 8 years in a row driving home, but it's always worth constantly repeating that. Mostly just to emphasize that destinations have a role to play in that informing, right? We steward the brand. They shouldn't be hearing about, you know, tourism projects and destination development secondhand, right? It comes right. Most benefit when it hears from us first. So
yeah. And listen, and can you blame destination organizations, you know, for a long time on this? No, because, you know, we were told for years that our job was to market ourselves externally, right? That was our job. We had to market externally. So 90%, 98% of your activities are geared to, you know, spreading the word outside your own community. And the only time we were talking to our residents inside our community was, you know, National Travel and Tourism Week, right? We'll put out a press conference. We'll put out a press release, share some new data, have an open house with punch and cookie and pizza at our visitor centers, and then we're done. You know, we weren't telling our message to the community, for at least the majority weren't telling the message of the community year round, and we didn't. Most of our org charts didn't have somebody whose role it was to sit in on the school board meetings, to sit in on beyond the meetings of those who control purse strings. We weren't fishing where the fish gather, so to speak, in terms of our resident groups.
Well said. All right, I'm going to try to gather a couple other research projects together to emphasize this one key point from the resident sentiment one. So from our Catalyst study that you guys were a featured partner on, along with another research project you have, the Halo Effect, the resident sentiment firmly says the same thing, is that tourism can attract residents and businesses. You've shown this for years now, and the Halo Effect, the Callis Report, just repeated it. I just think it's worth to always get your take on that aspect of the brand and that halo effect that inspires residents and visitors alike.
Yeah, yeah. And funny how all this development has a thread with Destinations International, because a team member just reminded me that it was 9 years ago at the DI annual convention in Austin where we promoted the very first case study that we did on halo effect. You know, the halo effect is very simple. You know, as destination marketers, we've always known, it's no secret, people like to live and work where they like to play. But, you know, and we can go back to Mara Gass for, you know, famous If You Build It speech. But at the same time, there wasn't a lot of science behind it, wasn't a lot of data behind it. So we looked at a core group 9 years ago of 8 different destinations that we were doing work with, that we were already doing some image research, some brand health assessment, and we said let's add a few more questions to the equation about the image of the destination for economic development factors beyond tourism. You know, how do I see this as a great place to live, start a business, a place to find a job, a place to send my kid to college, a place to retire? All these other factors that economic development agencies compete after every day beyond the tourism, obvious for us in there. And we saw that there was a sweet spot? A couple things. We saw that in pretty much every case, and we've replicated the study now, Andreas, over 100 times for our client base over the past 9 years. And I will tell you this, that for every single case, if the destination has an impactful marketing campaign, meaning it's positively viewed, there is a significant delta, high double digits, between those who are aware of the destination's marketing campaign versus those who are unaware of the marketing campaign in the lift in all those image attributes, as I told you, that go beyond just a place to visit in there. We also take a look at the correlation between actually visiting the destination and not visiting within a recent time period, within the past 2 years. And that same double-digit lift happens when they come to the destination versus those who haven't. The actual biggest sweet spot is if they are aware of the marketing and then they came. Now we're looking at almost triple digit lift in every situation of the image of that destination as a place to, as a place to live and work and find a job and send people to college and retire and so forth in there. So really a tremendous impact. And as our residents tell us through the resident sentiment study, you're correct, that they understand that this speaks to quality of life, this speaks to that. But they're not seeing it in their own pocketbook yet. They haven't connected the dots yet about, wait a minute, these residents are paying, or sorry, these visitors are actually generating some tax revenue that offsets things. They are actually saving my household a little bit. Wait a minute, there's a more plethora of jobs because there's a more demand for services and other infrastructure in our community and so forth in there. And so it's our role. We've got to connect the dots for them in here because that halo effect is powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I always want to emphasize how much of a centerpiece that is of the Catalyst Report because it emphasizes that the brand is what inspires that talent acquisition, talent being new residents, businesses, workers, families, you name it.
At the end of the day, Andreas, the destination organization really should be the brand manager for all marketing initiatives for the destination.
Preach. All right, let's tie into a little bit of your background actually running a destination organization, of which you did a few. You already articulated at the beginning of this that one of the biggest, you said, a communication gap is between destination organizations and residents. What are your thoughts on bridging that? You used to wear the hat of it. All your clients are destination organizations. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I had a challenge when I was state tourism director in Ohio, which was even more on a microcosm of that, which was the legislature. You had your legislators that were in heavy tourism driven districts, and so they got the value and the economic impact there. And then you had the other two thirds that perhaps didn't see tourism as a main driver in their communities and get that. And we literally. Back in the day, I literally had to have binders created for all the 99 legislative districts in the state of Ohio at the state level and literally create these binders every year and put all of our activities, our partner activities and so forth, and document that. And then I'd meet with all these members of the legislature every year and kind of give them a copy of their binder and show them where it is. They always said, bring me the numbers, bring me this, bring me that. And sure enough, we had to do that. Now, that would be a daunting task to undertake with all the residents in our community, but we have to create, I learned from that a very important lesson, which is every destination organization needs to create some type of community engagement plan. I touched on it earlier, who's going to go fishing where your fish gather? Who's at the Board of Education? Who's at the big church group gatherings? Who's at the community town hall meetings that may have nothing to do with tourism directly? But when they're talking about the need to, bring in try to raise some more funds for something to help take care of an initiative, they can, there's your opportunity to say, hey, by the way, I know we're looking to generate some more tax dollars to make this happen and whatnot. And they're just letting we just booked these three large conventions that are going to have an impact of this in our community. Hopefully, some of that revenue is going to trickle down to you guys, and you'll see that you're part of the solution. We're doing our part to be part of the solution. Or at the end of the day, just that opportunity to say, hey, here's some interesting initiatives that we've been talking about or that we're looking at. I'd love just to quickly straw poll you guys. What do you think about something like this? What do you think about something like that? Just making sure that you're aware that you're there. And, you know, being there is half the battle. Had an old colleague who passed away a number of years ago who always said, you got to be there before you got to be there. And that was a real, real eye-opening statement to me about you know, if you're a friendly face that they know and they recognize at the end of the day, they'll trust you more there versus, oh, you've got a hot issue. Now you just bother showing up to my meeting. I don't know you from Adam, where you've been all along. So,
yeah, you're illustrating one of the core values of a decentralization is trust in a community. And you're articulating that, yes, even there is a gap here, this is not an insurmountable gap that decentralizations cannot bridge.
Simple communications. I mean, we're just talking about where's your community, a community newsletter, a community focus page on social media, a community, a community report that you put out from time to time that actually gets into the circles. But even more importantly, again, creating that, what's that role in the organization? Who is going to show up where your community gathers? Who's your primary community ambassador? Sometimes it's the CEO, but, you know, it depends on the destination. The CEO is already pulled in 25 different directions. So, yes, I hate to say it, you may have to create one more position on the org chart, but it will pay you back tenfold in the investment that you make in that, because you will be seen as part of the community. Let's face it, folks. A lot of our communities didn't even realize there was something called a destination organization until the pandemic hit, right? When we all turned our marketing inward. So, you know, there's your tell.
Absolutely. So one of the parts I've seen you present that I think you get the most fired up about is generational data. You know, to the demographics, right? You already know where I'm going to go with this. You make a pretty good point when you articulate how the data looks across, you know, from boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, whatever comes after that. I don't want to bury the lead, but in your own words, from the most recent findings, you know, what are you seeing with how different generations view and support tourism or lack thereof?
Well, let's put it this way, and I'm oversimplifying it for the sake of this conversation, but boomers and Xers are generally much more positive about tourism and its impact in the community and quality of life and so forth than our millennials and Gen Zs. And it's more about life stage, right? At the end of the day, the priorities of Gen Zs and younger millennials is a little bit different than, say, the Gen Xers and the boomers that are, you know, retiring or entering retirement or you know, becoming empty nesters and, you know, depending on where they are in the life cycle. And it's an important differentiation to understand. And while we look at this on a generational basis from a point of research, in there, I really, really want to emphasize that life stage within that generation is really, really important too. And I think one of the most, glaring areas where it showed up is in our industry's attractiveness to workforce and to careers. You know, we asked the questions about, you know, we asked these folks how much they agree or disagree with the statements of, you know, there are careers to have, there are career paths to have in the travel and tourism industry. There's upward mobility in the travel and tourism industry. And generally, looking at the boomers, they tend to be the most positive about that, and the most negative is going to be Gen Z. You know, Gen Z, look at their life stage. Mom and dad are still paying for a lot of their travel, right? Because a lot of them are still in college or coming out of high school and so forth. Or if they are paying, you know, they're more limited budgets if they're paying on their own than say a Gen Xer. But they have, they're a product of their environment, right? Most of their engagement with our industry is the front line, right? So they believe that we're a bunch of front desk clerks, burger flippers, ticket takers, and so forth. They're not having too many interactions with corporate or executive management or anything like that. So, you know, they may see if they see the GM of the hotel, it's usually with only if they have a problem, right? So it's not a, so they haven't been exposed to that. And let's face it, again, not knocking our industry, but we haven't done as good a job recruiting until recent years in the schools. We haven't gotten to these folks early enough in the career path plotting and exposing them to the careers. There haven't, when I was coming up and you were coming up, Andreas, there weren't a lot of internships available in our industry that we knew about, were they? You know, like I said, I fell into the industry. I just applied. There was a help wanted ad at a local hotel, and I kind of stumbled into it. And then I found my own path through it, thanks to a couple of good mentors. But that was luck more. That was chance more than any type of plotting. And so. We really got to take a look at that. And again, on the workforce side of things, that's, I think it's worth most glaring, but we see it time and time again in terms of support for community, its impact on quality of life, in terms of development and sustainability, that Gen Z and some of the millennials, we just haven't built enough trust with them yet. And again, the best way to build trust is to spend time and engage with them. And oh, by the way, I'm a Gen Xer. There is no way in heck, if I'm a DMO, I'm sending myself to go meet with a bunch of Gen Zs, right? Who on my team looks and reflects that mindset and lives that experience better? So again, it's looking at the people we hire, we recruit, and then we turn into our ambassadors to engage with that community.
Now, tie this to one of your prior answers, that this is also fundamentally a communication gap. Right.
Absolutely. It really all ties into communication. It's not about changing how we do business. It's about changing how we talk about how we do business.
Yeah. Words matter. One of the great things about the industry briefs is that they represent basically a national benchmark. And you kind of said in the beginning, of which clients themselves can subscribe to it and get their own resident sentiment for their particular destination. How have you seen destinations who subscribe to the application of the research? What data, how have you seen them use both against the national benchmark, and then how have they seen them use it internally and their own stakeholders for their community?
Yeah, I love this question because the answer is very diverse. We've seen several buckets kind of how our client base uses this information. And it's fun to watch because now we have clients that, have done their second one with us, or maybe even their third wave of the study. And we always get asked, how frequently should you do a pulse check with a resident sentiment study? It depends on your destination. It depends what your baseline one shows. For some, they need to do it annually. For some, it's every 2 or 3 years, but it's really kind of become an essential KPI, I think, especially since the pandemic, for a lot of destination organizations. In terms of its use, so we've got the full gamut. We've got some destinations that will create that are in the process of creating or have created their own community engagement plans as part of their annual our marketing communications plan, and they use that as a foundational tool to measure their progress on certain elements of that engagement plan in there. We've got some clients that really primarily did the sentiment study because there were one or two issues that they knew were brewing and they really wanted to get a read on that. And so they've used that as kind of an issues management type to help drive some of the strategy to manage through that issue in there. We've seen clients that will say, honestly, Amir, we look at it internally. We make a few tweaks to our communications and our engagement plan, but we don't talk about this. This is the plan I keep in my drawer. We don't talk about it externally. It's the plan I keep in my drawer. So when that reporter calls and says, "Hey, I've heard some residents grumbling in this neighborhood about too many visitors, or whatever," and then they pull it out and go, "Well, that's funny because we just did a study 6 months ago that said only 1 out of 10 of our residents thought there might be too many visitors, coming through and so forth." So we've seen this full gamut from full utilization to kind of have it ready to play a little defense. But one common thread is that everybody who's gotten that study to a T has used it to tweak some form or fashion how they're engaging with their community stakeholders in there. And then, after about 2 years of doing these for individual destinations, they started coming back to us and saying, "Well, this is great and wonderful, and we know you're not a PR agency or a communication strategist, along with your researchers. So, I don't know the first thing about how do I get myself from A to Z to budge that needle to move this issue from a red flag to a green flag to so forth in there." And then we noticed this little consultancy that had just come about during the pandemic out there, called Clarity of Place, and they were developing some really, really cool programs about that, because at the end of the day, it is about your capacity as a community to handle visitors and the comfort level of those residents within the community to have X amount of visitors coming through every day. And there's a balance, a tipping point somewhere between that. And so we love what Clarity Place was doing. So we actually ended up investing in the company. They're now a subsidiary of ours, but they've got a tool called Place Balance that they have been, they rolled out last year at your annual convention, and that they have been effectively being able to coach destination organizations on how to engage with their stakeholders and define, here's the line in the sand. Based on your capacity and your comfort level, this is where throughout your year, you know, this is where you have more comfort levels, where you have less comfort level, you have more capacity, less capacity, draw a line in the sand and monitor it. And oh, by the way, update it as needed. But it's setting that line in the sand together with your community stakeholders. And to see something like that evolve out of the simple sentiments work that we were doing, that was exciting. And that, to me, that kind of brought it full circle.
And again, it goes to show just sort of all the nuance that goes into just sentiment research and the runway it can have to other endeavors, like you just mentioned.
Absolutely.
So a little bit of a small pivot towards the end of our conversation. So for the listener, again, everything you've heard today, you can find on both our website and Longwood's website for the industry briefs. But I wanted to kind of acknowledge a professional accomplishment that's soon coming for you as the listener hears this. So everything about the industry briefs and this research can only be done possible because of the foundation, the Destinations International Foundation. Myself and Jack have talked numerous about it. I am a benefactor of the foundation, being hired as a grant originally. But you, by the time listeners hear this, will become the upcoming chair or the chair of the Destinations International Foundation starting July. Just wanted to give you a bit of a floor and opportunity to talk about what that means for you and your hopes for the foundation.
Well, thank you. You know, it's a tremendous honor, first and foremost, to have been, you know, nominated and elected by my peers to take on this endeavor over the next year and succeed so many amazing chairs of the foundation. For me, the foundation, you know, one of our pillars at Longwoods International is giving back to the industry that we serve and has supported us so well over the past 46 years. And giving back and adding my own personal mantra, which is always try to make a difference. And so my quest to give back and make a difference at the same time, the foundation was just a perfect opportunity because let's face it, you think about all the activities over the years of the foundation, that everything that the foundation has incubated and put forth. You know, a lot of the membership at Destinations International recognizes all the tools like the economic impact calculator, 30 under 30, you know, the DEI programs, you know, social inclusion programs, everything that's been going on in over the past, you know, few decades, some of the most popular assets for a member at DI really came about because they were incubated or developed or hatched in the foundation itself. And it's those foundation contributions that make these things possible. The Catalyst program you mentioned, I mean, yep, that was issued through a grant of the foundation. Like you said, your position, your whole department, you know, came about because of the work of the foundation, recognizing that advocacy and research is one of the pillars for, or two of the pillars for Destinations International. And you weren't structured accordingly for that till that happened. So again, this foundation is a great way to give through that. I'm really excited about the year coming up. It's been a labor of love for me over the past, gosh, at least, I got very active at DI back in my days at Brand USA. So I think what about a dozen years or now I've been very active within DI, but the last 8 or 9 years in particular, I've been very active with the foundation and watching it grow, watching our donor base growing, and anybody can get involved in the foundation. Heck, if you're listening to this during or around annual convention, hopefully bid on something at the silent auction, and you can get something great while helping a good cause. There's a lot of activities that the foundation is sponsoring. You're going to learn about a little bit more about the foundation's upcoming activities at the annual convention, and let's face it, at the end of the day, please give back and help make a difference, because if you benefit from any of those DI programs, help set the stage for the next generation of leaders to benefit from DI.
Absolutely. Just a nod to your character, I want to point out, at last year's Advocacy Summit, you sat with us and team selling t-shirts for the benefit of the foundation at the Advocacy Summit, and sat with us the majority of the time helping sell t-shirts that benefited the foundation. So just wanted to acknowledge that and appreciate how much you mean to us in the foundation, Amir.
I appreciate that. And it's good to know that if this research thing doesn't work out, I got a good future as a t-shirt hawker.
So. You got it. So again, Amir, thank you so much for your time today, as well as also, you know, the extent of your team for all the work that you all do. Folks want to find more about you or the work you do, where can they go?
Longwoodsinternational.com or any of our social media channels.
Simple and sweet. So thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Amir Alon on this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or simply checking out our content throughout the advocacy section of our website or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.